Hey, this is Sabriel. A bit of a content warning for this week's episode. There will be mention or discussion of self-harm this week as it relates to a plot point on Star Trek Picard in this week's episode, Hide and Seek. Thank you.
Captain, we have them. We've established Transporter Lock, the Star Trek Discovery podcast. Join Ken and Sabriel each week as they explore strange new episodes, seek out new plots and new characters, and boldly go where no podcast has gone before.
Hello and welcome to Transporter Lock episode number 106 for Saturday, April 30th, 2022. I'm your co-host, Chief Engineer Ken Gagne, joined by my captain.
Hi, I'm Captain Sabriel Mastin, and Ken, cover your eyes, it's a flashback grenade.
No! And wow, all these flashbacks after just having gotten kidnapped by the Romulans on my way to a conference on Earth.
One, it's not my joke, and two, did you actually listen to last week's episode?
Of course.
Okay, good. I hope it wasn't. I mean, it would have been cool if you would have also come up with the same reference, but
it'd be like a mind meld or something.
Yeah.
No, actually, the Romulans were quite nice. They offered me tea and sat me down for a nice chat.
Yeah, and only 6 mind probes instead of the customary 8.
But you know what hurts the most after the lack of respect? It's that my insurance didn't cover it.
Oh, the worst.
I know. I mean, if they're not going to cover probes, then what's the point?
They would have only covered one at a time, one a week.
Yeah, and I have to get a referral from another Romulan physician who's not within this star system.
Well, welcome back. And while you were gone, I mean, I had fun talking to Shar, but also while you were gone, I finally watched Army of the Dead with Tig Notaro.
Oh, I have not seen that. The one that she filmed afterward because they got rid of one of the actors and they digitally inserted her.
Uh-huh. She was probably one of my favorite parts of the entire film.
And was it obvious to you, like it was in various episodes of Discovery, that she wasn't actually there?
Actually, less obvious. Only if I really, really looked for it. Because I knew that. But there are a few times where, like, damn, this is really good work.
Do you recommend the movie?
If you are looking for goofy fun that is quite gory. But it is stupid and zombie movie in the fun way, and more like the, oh, what's that, Zombieland way?
Yes, I haven't actually seen that. My go-to for silly zombie movie is Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness. Oh, okay. And Shaun of the Dead was good, but it's not my favorite Simon Pegg movie.
Yeah, more along those lines. There are some good funny parts there, but I'm not usually one for zombie movies, but I had a fun time with this one.
Well, good. I will add it to my list. And I had fun while you were gone talking to Commodore Mark Thompson about the episode Monsters. And then you and I swapped. So we are finally reunited after 3 weeks. This did actually happen once before, 2 years ago, where one of us took a week off, then the other took the other week off. Various scheduling conflicts. Glad to be reunited, Sabriel.
Yeah, and today we are here to talk about Hide and Seek.
Yes, the penultimate episode of the penultimate season of Picard. That's a lot of cheese.
General feelings without trying to answer and adding 83 caveats to it. How did you walk away in just a few words?
Finally.
Cool.
That's my summary of this week's episode. Finally.
Thank you. Thank you. And finally, I actually got the answer I was looking for. I enjoyed this.
How did you feel, Sabriel?
I enjoyed this.
And we're just going to leave it at that. No explanations, right?
All right. Thanks for coming.
Cool.
No, that's not what that part's for. That part's just to start icebreaker.
Well,
for the icebreaker.
The ice is broken. Consider
all right.
Broken. Now.
I think that's it. No. So I wanted to say, like, that opening where just before the credits roll, all the Borg start beaming into the field and you see the green lasers pointing all around. Like, oh, that was so good. That was perfect. Scary Borg that we needed.
Yes. Although I did have to wonder at the end of last week's episode, when Agnes assimilates that first soldier, all the other soldiers are standing there seeing this happen. How did the other assimilations go down? Did they willingly stand around, wait for her to come touch them, or was there a fight?
Oh, I didn't think about it because it didn't matter.
I mean, most assimilations that we've seen in Star Trek were not willing because people know who and what the Borg are and what they do. She had the element of surprise this time, but she wasn't very subtle about that first assimilation. So,
and I think you can tie it back into the zombie talk at the start, where you get one, and then all of a sudden it's much easier to start spreading that around. And whatever those guys can do, I don't know and I don't care. But, you know.
I did like that they had the, not only the green transporter beam, but also the green laser scopes.
Yeah,
those lasers were on brand for the Borg. I feel like they didn't have green scopes until they were assimilated. So I like that Queen Agnes sort of incorporated that into her proto-assimilation. Like, okay, everything else is going to be flawed and imperfect because this is still 21st century tech, but we got to have green laser scopes.
You know, it's kind of fun that they changed it from the red originally when they got the first Borg.
Oh, you're right. That's how Locutus was staring at the view screen with the red
but,
laser.
You know, we got green lasers eventually in technology. I don't know the laser technology beyond the Alan Parsons project. So I don't know the history of color lasers, and I'm going to have to look that up afterwards.
Yeah, most laser pointers that I see nowadays, the really high-powered ones that are illegal at airports, are green.
Yeah.
So maybe the Borg just caught up to our technology. That's just a detail I appreciated, though.
Yeah.
But the reason I say finally is because you and Char were talking about at least six different plots that all need to be tied up in the last two episodes. Neither of you seemed too worried about them rushing things, which I was worried. I feel like they tied up enough of them this week that I'm now less worried. I am also surprised at how much they tied up this week, because there's still another episode to go.
Yeah, the only thing absolutely tied up is getting home and Q.
Wait, those are still outstanding, you mean? Or
yeah.
Yeah. And also Adam Soong.
I mean, there's minor things, but those are like, yep, how is this all going to relate? I mean, I guess they all related to each other, so I'm kind of blending them all together. But yeah, no, I wasn't too worried. I think we've talked about this in the past where, oh no, are they doing this at the right pace? I'm like, when I realize I don't know the right pace. we can say we want more and more and more, but, you know, sometimes they have a reason too. Doesn't necessarily mean that something can't feel slow, but, you know.
Right. And only they have the script. Only they know the pace at which they need to go.
Right. I can't remember or recall if I mentioned last week or if it's something I've said in a private conversation, but I think that in retrospect, like especially Picard, but even to an extent, Discovery, while I do appreciate and do have a fondness now for the once a week episodes to sit here and stew on it, these two shows almost feel like they were built for binging.
Yeah. I really appreciated what Char was saying, how you have to watch the next week's episode to make sense of the one you just watched. I feel like it's been that way all season, where I'm not necessarily cliffhangers, but more of a, huh? And so I feel like I finally got some of that closure this week, which I appreciated.
That's good. I'm excited to do a second viewing, like much closer together and see, oh, okay. Actually, that timing, that pacing feels right. Whereas, you know, here we're spreading it over 2 months where some things can feel a little weird or off.
Yeah, so there were a lot of characters who got a lot of time on camera this week. Why don't we start with Captain Jean-Luc Picard himself, even during all this firefight that he is trying to endure and escape from. He's still having flashbacks, still taking the time to stop and talk to Talon about what happened to him when he was a little boy. That's been a common motif in all this new Trek that we've been watching, where even when time is rushing, they still have time to talk. And that's, I don't mind that, because sometimes that's the only way to move the plot forward. But wow, there certainly was more that happened beyond what Talon originally saw in his memory when he opened the door.
Go backwards a few seconds here. Just because we get a flashback doesn't necessarily mean that it happens in real time. But also, it makes absolute sense that he is having these flashbacks, especially now when he had the trauma of being assimilated, and now Borg are bearing down on him again, and he's already going through a bunch. So to me, it makes a lot of sense that he's starting to having to go through a lot of repressed trauma right here. He's at home, seeing a version of the house that is in shambles. The Borg are bearing down on him. He's got a lot on his shoulders right now. To me, it sounds like, man, yeah, it makes a lot of sense that everything is coming up all at once.
Yeah, I can totally see how almost any trauma would be triggering for Picard. And I mean that in the real sense. But not only is it just any trauma he's experiencing, it's ones that hit very close to home, as you point out, both figuratively and literally.
Yeah. So I've seen complaints about that online. And I'm like, nah, to me, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, the flashbacks make sense. The part where it's more real time for me is when he actually stops to talk to Talon, like when they're in the dungeon or when they're in the Solarium. But again, that makes sense to me too.
You know, I really like those scenes with Talon and working through that. And we'll get to the mother thing in a bit here. But I did kind of have to giggle because, like, at one point when they were underground, they came from one direction. They walk, he has a flashback, he turns around, he points, it's that way, and it's right back to where they came from. I even had to rewind, and I was like, did I catch that right the first two times I saw this? And I rewind it, yep. And that's all of a sudden where Soong's androids or Borg were coming from.
I wondered if maybe I had gotten confused, because I only watched these episodes once, so I appreciate you verifying that, no, I got it right.
But through all that, he ends up right back at the chateau, like... but I'm guessing that's some kind of allegory, too. We got some kind of, like, he's lost in his mind. He's lost in the maze underneath. He's lost, but he's kind of finding his way. He had to get back to where he started from to move on.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, he had said this way is the field, but then they couldn't go that way. So he said, let's go to the Solarium instead. And, yeah, he wound up right where it was most important for his memories to drive him to.
So, yeah. Oofda. Let's just get it.
I will say, though, that I liked that we finally got to see his dad being a good guy.
Yeah.
Because we started this season, over the course of several episodes, believing that his father engaged in domestic abuse. And while we don't have evidence that he didn't, this is the first time we've seen him as seemingly a loving, caring husband. And that was a nice change because, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, JL, he's an unreliable narrator, right? He sees all it from a child's point of view. He saw his dad treating his mom badly, what he thought was badly.
Right.
And a curmudgeon.
I mean, I do believe he was a curmudgeon, but that doesn't make him a bad person.
Oh, no, he was a curmudgeon, especially in the sense that, well, Jean-Luc's brother is a lot like him. Not Luddite or Luddite-ish.
Yeah, I believe it from seeing the house that they lived in. It was not the most high tech. It looked very unchanged from the year 2024.
Or even in, what's the episode? Right after the simulation family?
Brothers.
Yeah, there was no technology to be seen anywhere.
No, I'm sorry. You were right. Brothers is the one with Data and Lore.
Okay. Family.
Yes.
But in any case, that episode when he goes back home, it's all, there's no technology there either, or very little.
His brother would hate what Jean-Luc has done with the vineyard. All those drones flying around. Oh my gosh.
Yes and no. They're still.
So yeah, so he finally was able to surface the trauma, the memory that he'd been repressing, and share it with himself, Talon, and the viewers. And we saw what happened to his mother.
Oofda. I didn't see that coming. I gasped when I saw her hanging behind him.
I suspected that him letting her out led to her demise. I didn't have the details, though. And that was not something I expected to see in an episode of Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen lots of death throughout all the series. Mm-hmm. But self-harm in that way. Oofda. That hit. I just did not expect. I went, oh!
Yeah, I didn't have that visceral a reaction. Maybe because I suspected something like that was coming. Not exactly that, but... Oh, I mean, even as I'm seeing it, though, I'm trying to rationalize it, but figure out what would I tell myself to allow myself to live with that kind of trauma. For example, if she was that intent, then she would have found a different opportunity. Even if Jean-Luc hadn't let her out that day, she was clearly resistant to professional help, or if not her, then her entire family. And she couldn't stay in that little bedroom forever. They had to let her out eventually. So what are they going to do? Just leave her locked in there when she's having her episodes and let her out when she's feeling better? And as if her husband can tell when those moments are, because he even said, you've been more present lately. You haven't had an episode in a while. You're doing great. And so he clearly at that time didn't see a need to lock her up.
I'm going to push back a bit there. We don't know the circumstances or number of times that she was put in her room. We don't know that she wasn't already seeing help and still felt that way. We are seeing all these things from a child's point of view and what he knows. He didn't even know that she was hurting for the longest time. So we don't know the circumstances of the room, why she was put in there for at least one night. I mean, I've been in situations, I don't want to get into them, where for someone's safety, you need to just separate them for a little bit or someone's time. I have no problem with this room scene. There is no sign to me that she is not actively getting treatment or help. This is just one night and one scene and one moment.
I suppose that's fair. I mean, there's a lot of blanks to fill in, and they can be filled in any number of ways. But I still think it's possible that even if Jean-Luc hadn't interfered, if that's the right word, even if Jean-Luc hadn't let her out that night, something may have happened.
Right. I agree there.
I mean, that's a big if, of course.
Yeah, he blamed himself for her death all these years, but it could have been anywhere, anytime.
Yeah, and as you and I were DMing on Twitter, this makes the first season TNG episode where no one has gone before all the more tragic.
Yeah, I saw a cut earlier today of that scene interposed with the lines from this week's episode, from Trek Corps even. It was a really good video.
Had you remembered that scene in context of watching this season of Picard?
I hadn't until someone pointed out to me a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I had not. So for those who don't remember, this is an episode where the Enterprise is flung into a part of space, the outer rim of the universe, where thoughts become reality. And Picard is walking down the corridor of the Enterprise, and he sees his elderly mother sitting there offering him a spot of tea. And he says, how is this possible? You're dead. And she says, yes, but I've always been with you. And that is exactly what Picard referenced this week. He says how he used to imagine her being old, offering him some tea and sitting down for a chat. And that's exactly what happened in TNG. that exact vision that he described to us is what the universe made real in that episode of TNG way back when.
Yeah, something 35 years ago coming later. Tying it all back again.
So I'm guessing that when Captain Picard took the helm of the Enterprise in season one, he was probably about 45 years old, or at least the actor was. So that was about, and I'm guessing in this episode of Picard, the flashbacks, he was about 15 years old. So about 30 years? No?
He was not 15. He was more like 5, 6, 7.
10?
Maybe. He seemed pretty not even sure. He didn't know what hide and seek was.
Okay, maybe let's go with 8 or 9. I'm really bad at kids.
He should be driving right now, right? No. Well, maybe in the future. He's definitely in calc class. He's young.
Okay, so let's say like 37 years later.
Right, okay. He is 37 years old at this point when he's with his mom. No,
no, I'm saying from when he is a kid in Picard to when he's the captain of the Enterprise was 37 years.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing his mom, when she passed, was about 35 years old. So that puts her at about 72. She would have been 72 had she lived when Picard took the helm of the Enterprise. So if time was progressing linearly, then that vision of her would be about 72 years old. That's all I was trying to figure out.
Gotcha. But yeah, that was rough, but I'm glad we're starting to kind of tie things together here.
And this does explain, I think to a degree, perhaps why Picard pushes people away. You were talking last week about the various relationships he's had, like with Vash. I think there were a couple of other relationships. There was that science officer who he played music with on the Enterprise for one episode.
Yeah, and the weird CG hands playing the flute.
Oh, I don't remember that. But also, one relationship that maybe is valid to discount, but I want to bring it up anyway. There's only been one time where Picard was in a relationship that actually involved marriage and children, and that was the Inner Light. He spent decades married to her.
That's right.
And granted, he didn't choose initially to be in that relationship, but eventually he did. Like, I remember him going to her and saying, I'm thinking about putting an extension on the house. She's like, oh. And he said, yeah, a room for the baby. She's like, you want a baby? So in that non-existent lifetime, he did allow himself to be, I don't know if the word is selfish, but I think that's something he's not very good at. As you and Char were saying, he had to be forced to go to Ryza, and even then he had an adventure. The one thing you don't have to force Jean-Luc Picard to do is ride horses.
Right. I would say even in that memory from the Inner Light, he didn't have much choice in the events that were going on there. Those are all memories of someone.
You think so?
I don't know. He may have, I think there were, it was more like a very guided story.
Almost like a Hollow novel.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've seen it, to be honest, but I don't think it was, I think it was more, here is some, the day in the life, or a life in the life of someone, a life in a day of someone's experiences.
But I do feel like what we learned about him this week does explain some of his reticence to open up to others. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what I've been kind of saying all season. He's needed to learn to open up a bit more.
One thing that frustrated me, though, is we saw Agnes cry. We saw Seven of Nine cry. When Picard, when Talon finally hugs him, which I'm so glad she did, because we don't often see men receiving physical affection unless it's romantic. I feel like he should have been crying, and he wasn't.
Why did you need him to cry?
I didn't need him to cry.
Oh, you were disappointed.
I was disappointed because I feel like we don't see men cry that often. And I feel like he had just had a revelation. This was a memory he'd been running from for 70 or 80 years. And he was mourning his mother. And he had just said like how he used to imagine her growing old and being there for him. And she's not. And that's hard. I mean, I lost my dad 6 years ago and I still cry about him.
Oh, and you are two different people, I would say. But I don't think it would have hurt the scene if you would have cried. I mean, I could see putting yourself in his shoes. Absolutely. I probably would have teared up too. But I didn't have any problem with him not. But I mean, I agree that we don't see men crying enough.
Yeah. I know we're two different people. Every two people are. But empathy is still a thing. We still have experiences that unite us. And I feel like that crying would have been a normal reaction in that situation. And if we're talking about Picard opening up, that would have been a good way to show that he was.
So more like a missed opportunity.
Yes.
I think that feels better.
I would totally agree with that.
Adam Sung's comment, in another future, we could have been friends or we could become friends. Like, oh, oof, da.
Just wait one season.
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously a little nod, but like, oof, oof.
Yeah. More to say about Picard, or shall we move on to some other characters?
I didn't have much, but I'm excited to see. Oh, you know what? Next episode, he's going to come back to the future, and he's because Lara saw him speeding off into the sky to save the universe once more. He's going to come back and say something, something, I'm sorry, something, kiss.
Yeah, we need to see some real world consequences to this revelation he's had in this episode. Otherwise, it's all for naught.
So that's what's going to happen next week. Should we talk about here? Since we're talking about the Chateau, Raffi and Seven, come on, just kiss. Please.
I agree. That's the next plot I wanted to talk about, and they missed. In my opinion, and in your words, I think another missed opportunity when she said, you know, when we get out of this, and Seven said, we're not getting out of this. And Raffi's like, yeah. Oh my God, I was waiting for the kiss and it didn't happen.
Me too. They're going to do it by the end of the season. I know it, but they should have done it here. It should have been here.
Yeah.
It should have been here.
Mm-hmm. Also, we don't see them make that open sprint across 50 yards of open space. And like the one that they weren't supposed to survive.
It was no big deal.
I feel like if they, since they made a big deal out of it going in, they should have made a big deal about it while it was happening. And that didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, is it important to get it? No. But after that setup, it felt like, oh.
Right. You know, kind of like we were talking about in a previous episode of this podcast, where we don't need to see them go from the car into the house. We can just assume that they get there.
Uh-huh.
But if you are in the car and you say, I don't know how we're going to get into the house. And then the next scene, they're in the house.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
That's the weird part. So like, they didn't, if they could have just said, just not silent and nodded at each other and ran.
Yeah, like if they, uh-huh. Exactly. If they said, we got this, it's them against us and we're from the future. So we have better artillery, better strategy.
We have better pepper shakers. We have better corkscrews.
True. Ice picks.
Yeah, that it feels like there was a scene missing or something didn't work out as good, well as they thought it did. Because why set that up? I feel like that was just a mistake on their side on the editing room floor.
If Seven was talking about not just the sprint across the field, but the overall mission, then she was almost correct, because the Borg Queen came really close to defeating both of them, and Seven was on her deathbed. So, yes, in the large scheme of things, it was that much of a life or death situation. But I feel like they were talking about the sprint across the field.
Yeah, they were. I love Raffi talking Seven up. Like, you could have been captain. You should be a captain. You should be this. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, and we finally found out why Seven didn't join Starfleet.
I would posit. Okay, tell me why, and I will tell you what really happened.
What do you mean?
Tell me why Seven didn't join Starfleet.
I mean, I would just be repeating what Seven said, which uh-huh. is that Starfleet didn't want a former Borg among their crew.
Interesting, because that's what I heard too. And then, wait, Seven didn't say that. Raffi made that assumption. It was heavily implied, but Seven didn't say that. And I wonder if there's some... And they may never explore it again, because they might be okay with that. But there might be more, because Icheb's in there. Jean-Luc was still allowed, but Seven wasn't.
I don't think Seven was allowing Raffi to believe something that wasn't true. Picard was already in Starfleet, and he was, in Star Trek First Contact, told not to go mm-hmm. on that mission because uh-huh. he was former Borg. Icheb, though, that's a good point. That would be contradictory to Seven. How long was Icheb Borg?
Since basically childhood too, because he was found in a maturation chamber. They were raised as Borg.
Yeah, but the maturation chamber didn't complete because he was mm-hmm. still a kid.
Well, however long it was, he was very young.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe this seems silly. Maybe Starfleet has some sort of rule. You cannot have been Borg for more than 3 years. Like, you must be this tall to ride this ride. I don't know.
I would posit that perhaps Seven's attitude or even her experiences are amazing and she's incredibly brilliant. And maybe part of it is because she is an XB. But it left it open to there is more to the story that we are unaware of and we may never hear.
Yeah, I don't think we will. I did like the mention of Janeway. She has not, I mean, clearly she's an important part of Star Trek Prodigy, but we haven't really heard her mentioned much in the live action series, not since she appeared in Star Trek Insurrection or Nemesis.
It was Nemesis, because how would you like a trip to Romulus?
Mm. Yeah.
But clearly she kept her commission because she's in Star Trek Prodigy.
Right. Yeah. Well, she said she was going to resign. Seven's like, no, don't bother. I quit.
Yeah, exactly. It's not worth it. Right. You know, maybe Seven didn't want to put up the fight, and that's why she didn't join. Or she didn't want to be inspected or researched. Or, you know, there's so many possibilities of that could fit and could expand into like a 7-year story. I hope that it would pick up. I would love to see more. But I feel like we just didn't get everything.
Well, it's kind of like when Kelvin Universe Spock was admitted into the Vulcan Science Academy, and he declined that invitation because he knew that there would be bias and prejudice. Mm-hmm. I can imagine Seven making a similar decision where she didn't want to go somewhere and be a spectacle or a threat. She just wanted to go and be herself. And that's what she got to do for the first 8 episodes of the season. Or yeah. Six, middle six. Yeah.
But by the end, Seven's pain of being reassimilated, even in this version of her, that was sad to see. She finally got to experience humanity, and all of a sudden, she's put right back where she was.
Yeah.
That was... But I liked her. As she comes to accept it, she's like, I am me.
Well, you know, I'm reminded of a novel by Ari Salvatore set in the Forgotten Realm, starring the dark elf of Dritz Dewarden. He is a drow, and that is a dark-colored elf who lives underground. In these books, this character lives above ground, and anytime he goes into a city, he is perceived as a threat because of the race he belongs to, even though this character does not adhere to those racial stereotypes. And so in one of the books, he actually finds a magical artifact, a mask that makes him appear as a woodland elf, which is not threatening. And he, Dritz Dewarden, chooses not to wear this mask because he feels that other people's prejudices are not his problem, and he's not going mm-hmm. to address them by pretending to be something he's not. And so Seven did get to enjoy being human, the human that she would have been had she never been assimilated. But just like Dritz Dewarden learned that he couldn't deny who he was, he had to accept himself if other people were going to. That's sort of what Rafi was telling her this week, was you need to acknowledge these two halves of you and stop running from them, just like Picard has been running from his past. And I would love to see the Seven who is fully integrated.
Yeah, and I think that was a little hint of what's to come. We've seen Rafi and Seven are two very different people who are very much in love with each other. They're still trying to live their own lives because their lives are in very separate directions. And I'm not saying they're going to give that up. Never going to take that. No. I'm not saying they're going to give that up or give it up entirely, but I think there's going to be some kind of way where they can spend more time together. And whether that means Seven stops being the Rangers or she is a Ranger on whatever ship Rafi is on again. I don't remember which one it was. However that would work, I don't know, and I don't care. Just some way that they'll be able to see each other more, whether it be joining Starfleet again or being able to be out in space and being more closer to each other. Whatever ways, I think they're going to be closer.
Hasn't there been talk of a Seven of Nine spinoff?
I have not heard that, Agata. I would be so overjoyed if there was. Jerry Ryan playing a character more for someone she thought she would never play again. She thought Seven's story was over, and now she gets... I was listening to an interview, watching a video yesterday, reading an interview. Yeah, she's overjoyed. She finally got to be someone beyond the cat suit, basically.
Mm. Well, good. I'm glad that she was willing to come back to the role because she is doing so well with it.
Yeah. Her saying that she could even be friends with the Borg Queen eventually. That's huge for her. At the end, she said, Jurati, you have half of our half of you is Jurati, and she's my friend. Something on those lines, and yeah. The Borg, and she's like, "Well, hopefully someday, you're friends with all of me, or whatever the wording is."
Yeah,
and it was Seven saying, you know, agreeing with, and like, "Oh, that's huge for her because all this anti-Borg, Borg are bad. Don't trust the Borg all season," and because you know she sees some of that, you know, that Borg in her, so she's very oof. And to have that, I thought that was huge for her, and I loved it.
I do want to talk more about the Borg Queen, but I almost feel like that is the most important part of this episode.
We'll get
and
there
so I kind of want to save it for last.
Yeah, we'll get there, but tying it there. Rafi, finally, I guess to have a little bit of closure with Elnor.
That's where I want to go, yeah.
I don't think Elnor, as an ECH and a holo-emitter, will be sticking around because the ship left. But unless... Queenie has him a version of him out there as well. But I was so happy to see him. I like this a lot.
Yeah, we've seen emergency medical holograms. We've seen emergency command holograms. This was our first time, as far as I know, seeing an emergency combat hologram.
Oh, no, we saw it at the beginning. When Seven, in the opening episode, Seven was fighting with the Rios, the combination of all the holograms he had in the first season. He's fighting with her, and he's got like all the parts of all the holograms in one. And because there's those raiders on her ship. And so we've seen a combat hologram.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I think it was even in the first season, too. The one that's heavy accented.
But he wasn't specifically in this season a combat hologram. He was all the holograms merged, right?
I don't know if they ever named it or whatever, that part.
Right. I feel like Elnor here, his sole purpose was to combat, and that was unique.
But Raffi, getting to talk to him, and I don't care how the technology works where it can read their mind when they die. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me, but I love it. And I'm glad that she got to have that moment before she gets the real one back in the Flash, Q Flash next season or episode. However, it's going to fix itself.
I'm reminded of when Data had the journals of the people on Omicron Theta 4 or whatever planet he was found on. And one of them had a mother who then came back onto the Enterprise and destroyed the crystalline entity. And Data said, based on your son's writings, I think he'll be very disappointed in you right now. I am hoping that it's, I mean, I know you said you don't care how they read their minds, but I'm hoping it's something like that where the computer is just inferring from known data about Elnor that, like, based on this corpus of data, I believe that his last thought about you was love.
Who knows what technology the Confederation stole?
Oh, you know what? That's a good point. I keep forgetting this is not the Federation. This is the Confederation.
That's right. My last note for the whole Raffi 7 ship Elnor area was beaming people into the wall. And it ties into the Picard talent part. That was so cool.
Yeah, we've never seen a teleporter purposely used that way, have we?
I don't think we have. It's been something that's postulated. I remember in a Choose Your Own Adventure Star Trek book I read when I was younger, there was an option to take the coordinates of the old man on the planet to go meet him or set your own. And if you took his coordinates, he accidentally gives you coordinates for the inside of a rock. And the picture there is just your head, your hair on top of the rock.
That's horrible.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I figured they were going to beam those people either like into outer space or the bottom of the ocean or just 2,000 feet up in the sky and let them follow their death. But no, he beamed them right into a rock and, conveniently for us, the viewers, right where Picard and Talon happened to be.
Right there.
Yeah, that was cool and malicious, and I loved it.
Ouch. Seven helping Raffi stab that Borg in the eye with a knife. Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah, that was... We so often see in action movies where you're trying to drive the knife in and the other person's holding it up. And I've never seen somebody else come along, just help and just push it down. And that was a nice change. I liked it. I will say that, you know what? This is a brief aside, but... As listeners who have been listening for a while may remember, I moved to a different Airbnb every couple of months. I just arrived at my current one about less than 48 hours ago. Went to set up my Apple TV this morning so I could watch this episode, Hide and Seek. This is the oldest TV, I'm sorry, the oldest flat screen TV I think I've ever seen. It has component input. No, it has composite input. It has an S video input. It has an SD card input. It does have HDMI, but it's only 480p. So I plugged in my Apple TV and it could not display correctly at 1080, could not display correctly at 720, went all the way down to 480. And that's the only way I could get it to work. And the picture quality was crap. I was so surprised and disappointed. I don't even want to see how my Nintendo Switch is going to look on it.
That'd be perfect for your... No, even the Wii had 720 in the high on the S video.
yeah, it did. It supported component input even.
I might have to watch on your computer like I do.
That's what I did. That's exactly what I did. I could not stand to watch Picard at 480. So I have a 27-inch monitor that I travel with, and I just sat at my workstation and I watched Picard.
Man, part of me kind of wants to see it like that and get the old TV experience.
Well, you're welcome to come over and watch it. I will be watching it on my monitor. I did realize, though, sometimes I turn on subtitles, and on the TV, on the TV, with the Apple TV, it's usually just binary, on or off. Mm-hmm. With the computer, I had the choice of font size, font style, font weight, and that was actually kind of nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, we should talk a little bit about Teresa.
Yes. These two, I love them so much. Teresa, there we go. Teresa calling Rios a miracle. My heart.
Yeah, just like you and Char, I loved that fictional scene she devised last week. Uh-huh. And now she has like not only him, but also the tricorder in her hand. She said, I'm gonna have to go back to doing medicine the old way after this. And she asks him to stay in that timeline.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. I mean, I know we've been talking about this before. You and I have talked about it. You and Char have talked about it. Does this episode give us any hints as to how that relationship is going to resolve itself?
Nope.
Because I so want to see them together, and I don't know how that can happen.
He'll get a time teleporter.
Or something. Hang
out there. But he brought up a few times that Ricardo reminds him of himself.
No, this came up last week. I don't want to see it be his own grandpa or something.
It happened again. The grandfather paradox.
No.
Just what Bashir was worried about.
By the way, I still think Picard's dad looks like Bashir.
He does look a little. I thought that too when I first saw him for a split second. I was like, what? Did they actually get? And then, you know, like, oh, no, it's Dr. Geis.
Yeah, but even this week, even knowing he's not Bashir, I still watched it. I'm like, he looks like Bashir. Anyway, yeah, I love this relationship, and I am very eager to see how it plays out.
Me too. We really didn't get a lot of them together this week, other than, you know, Camp Rios has shown he really wants to get back and help the Admiral. He loves JL. And he was starting to say a story or a sentence to Teresa and didn't get to finish. He just said something. I thought it was going to be, I love you. But this week in the second viewing, it sounded like he was going to say something else. Hey, Teresa, he was going to, yeah.
Yeah, I went and rewatched that one scene as well. And I don't know what he was going to say. I don't think it was, I love you. It was probably more like, I'm sorry, but I need to go.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And given that both Picard and Teresa thought that he was going to get himself killed, and those two Borg had their guns up ready to shoot Picard, I knew he was going to beam in right between the guards and Picard. I thought he was going to take the shot. I mean, it's like take the bullet for Picard. Uh-huh. And I'm really glad that didn't happen.
Everyone's telling him, you're shoot your eye out, and he shot his eye out. the last small note I have for someone else, I had Dr. Soon.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Soon. I love his bit where I wasn't a violent man.
He's self-aware enough to realize the contradiction.
Yep. I like that. That scene was where he's in the field shouting at guards looking all around was so CG. The most CG of any CG I think I've seen in Picard or Star Trek. It was so blue screen to me and obvious. It took me out of it.
You know, that's actually, I forgot the reason I mentioned the whole debacle about my 480p TV is because the monitor I use doesn't have rich blacks, and a lot of this episode was very dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could sometimes get the general gist of what was happening, like Seven helping push the knife into the eyeball. But some scenes I was like, the finer details were lost on me. I was very glad there was so much lightning and no rain. I really appreciate that.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Soon standing outside in the dark. And by the way, it's been dark at Chateau Picard this entire season, which implies this is all happening within like 24 hours.
I think it's been a few days. But in any case, I appreciate that they have some kind of blue lighting in the underground caves for TV. I think they're using a lot of the darkness. I mean, obviously, you kind of have these kind of scenes at night. It's just how production works. But you use a lot of nighttime stuff to hide stuff as well. And I probably, some of it was to hide the cleanness of the actual set, you know, intermixed with the junk of the old timey thing. That way, you know, it's cheaper that way. So But it almost looks like to me like they film these things in the light. Kind of like old movies. They would film it in daytime and then put like a blue filter over it.
Right, right.
And that's what they did here.
And you're right about it being several days because we saw them arrive in LA during the day. Then they went to the Europa Gala at night. And then Picard was in the clinic during the day. And so it's been at least, I don't know. It's hard to tell. Time is wibbly wobbly.
More than one.
Yes. Shall we talk about the Queen?
Yeah, I still love her.
I loved that. Last week, we really only got to see the persona of Agnes verbally when she stopped Rafi from being suffocated. I like that we actually got to see her manifest this week and have the two characters, Agnes and the Queen, actually talk to each other. That was
really cool. Just like the Queen had been doing with her. And now the Queen's seen Agnes. I like that a lot. I love the Queen's callback to the opening song of this episode. Time is on our side, she said. That is a song they use right when the season starts.
Oh, nice. I miss that.
Agnes using the same thing, the emotional thing, to get back in control was great. Yep. She's very smart.
Yep. You know, Agnes just being one step ahead with the fractal encryption and with summoning Elnor. I was wondering if Agnes had allowed herself to be assimilated in the first place to get at the Queen from the inside, and that does not feel like it was the case. And yet she is nonetheless doing her best to fight her way out, and I really like that.
She's very formidable. I agree. I don't think she intended to, but...
Right, because if she intended to from the beginning, then that almost implies to me that the Queen was never really a threat.
Yeah.
And so I like that it wasn't the plan and that Agnes is just doing her best with what she's got.
Is there something that made you think it might have been something like that?
Only because I've seen that trope in other TV shows.
Oh, okay.
Nothing particular in this season.
Gotcha. Yeah. I love that Durati figured out that, you know, the whole, this is BS. the whole thing, it's not about perfection. It's all because the Queen is lonely. All the things that the Borg do. And that the Borg always lose in every reality, or, you know, most realities anyway. I love it.
That was an impressive revelation that the only way for the Borg to not be defeated is to not be an enemy in the first place.
Yeah. So we get the Legion.
Right. And we've seen, there was a Voyager episode of a species that went around resurrecting the dead and making them into their own species. Like Harry Kim. No,
yeah.
not that he died, but he had this woman who had been on Voyager and who had died came back, and Kim was like, oh, I always had a crush on you and now you're alive. This is great. And then she was like, no, actually, it turns out I need to go back and be part of this alien race now. Uh-huh. So it sounds like the Borg are kind of going to be doing that now.
I think more like, hey, we see you just spinning out of control and about to die. Want to join us and not die? You're going to get some implants, but you'll be alive.
Yeah. You know, last week you and Char were talking about the Vidians on Voyager.
Uh-huh.
I'm reminded of this bad sci-fi movie called Millennium, where people in the future, they need organ transplants. So what they do is they travel back in time to planes that are about to crash. And those people are going to die anyway.
Oh,
and they kidnap the people and bring them to the future and harvest their organs.
That's right.
Way there's no disruption to the timeline.
I've heard of something like this before. Or we talked about it before.
Yeah. So in a way, like the Borg are kind of going to be doing that, except not for their own self-interest, but to actually save people.
Or at least that's one avenue to add to the collective or to the Legion.
Yeah. Now, what really confuses me is all the permutations to the timeline that can happen as a result of this, because the Queen said very cryptically, she could have just been more obvious, that for the mission to succeed, there have to be two Rene Picards, one who lives and one who dies. So the Queen who said that is from the Confederation timeline. And so if that timeline never exists, then theoretically that Queen never exists. But also, if the Queen takes the La Serena, which is technology from 400 years in the future of the Confederation, and starts flying around space, offering people the option to be assimilated before they die, then that dramatically changes the timeline that Picard and his crew are fighting to save, because that clearly didn't happen in their timeline. And so I have no idea what's happening here.
We don't know it didn't happen. It could have been just in parts of space that the Federation never got around to. When you, if you call yourselves Legion, you're not the Collective.
That's true.
And we don't know where they're working at in the future. They have 400 years to get, you know, to get to, or 200 years or whatever, to get somewhere where they're not going to be detected. To me, it's like I can figure out ways. For reference, I keep calling them Legion because in
captions.
Captions for like the first or second episode.
Yeah.
It said Legion, and they may not actually call them that, but that's right.
Well, it's kind of like the Queen said that you're not going to need a Borg Slayer because at least not for us.
Yeah.
You know, that may have been a meaningful caveat because maybe there are the Borg and there are Legion. Uh-huh. Because the Borg are out there in the year 2024.
Exactly.
Oh.
The Tuna Renees, I think that means someone's going to have to pretend to be Renee for whatever needs to get done.
But Renee can't die because then Picard will never exist.
Or maybe Renee isn't the one who... We don't know if Picard ever got back to Earth. Do we?
Maybe they need to show Adam Soong a body. So that he lays off, and that way the mission can still succeed without his interference.
Yeah. I can see all, because remember they even said records of the time are spotty. And so I could see someone has to either complete the mission and say it's Renee, or someone needs to pretend to be Renee and die or sacrifice or confuse, whatever the proper term plot line is.
You know, I just was reminded that my friend Gene, who actually gave us the name for this podcast, Transporter Lock, he emailed me a link to a story saying that the story of somebody going back in time to modern day Earth and meeting one of Picard's ancestors and having to ensure that they lived has been done before in Star Trek: The Experience at the Las Vegas Hilton.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was. It was. I forgot. And I did that ride so many times. I forgot about that little bit.
Right.
The Klingons go back and try to fight because they think they're pretty sure one of you is the ancestor. So we had to bring you to the future.
Right. Any one of us could be Renee Picard.
I forgot all about that. And now now I can say instead of the season being only a retelling of A Christmas Carol, it's also a retelling of Star Trek: The Experience.
Right.
Not the Borg encounter.
No.
But the first half.
Yes.
Klingon, what was it called? Klingon?
The Klingon encounter or Borg encounter?
No, it was Borg encounter and Klingon. Oh, man.
I am Googling it now, which makes for great audio. And let's see. It actually was, it's Klingon encounter and Borg invasion.
Aha, there we go.
Yeah, I am surprised that for the final episode of this season, the threat they need to address is Adam Soong. I really thought he was the lackey to the Queen. The Queen was going to be the ultimate threat, which is why I was surprised that it got tied up in the penultimate episode. Not disappointed, to be clear. Uh-huh. I didn't expect this turn, and I don't know where it's going.
I really didn't know who was going to be the ultimate villain. Q, or Queen, or Adam, or all three. In some regard, it was all three. Q, I don't think he's a villain at all. You know what I think? I think this is a gift from him from him in his own little queer or QA. I guess it's queer QA, but that's not how I meant the word, but it worked because I am very gay, so I could say that. No, but in his own QA, this was a gift for JL to help him work through his PTSD.
Yeah, it was really interesting in last week's episode how Q said, I didn't bring them to the past. They did that to themselves. And how he said he wants to end his life by making up for a lifetime of basically torturing Picard. And so he sees this as a gift. And wow, I can't imagine how Q thought this was going to play out, how he wanted it to play out. Because if he didn't expect anybody to go back into the past, and this was going to be a very different outcome. But this does bring up one more thing. I agree with you and Char's theory that Q is dying. And this week we now have a Borg Queen who is committed to going around saving the dying. Are they going to assimilate Q?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Because she just flew off. She left Earth without having ever encountered Q. So I feel like it would be neat if he got assimilated. And I feel like that would be meaningful and satisfying, but I don't see it happening if she's already gone.
I mean, Q is going to flash them back home and fix his thing with his last whatever, all of the gift from Kes in Voyager. Something like that. And I think this is all some weird way to help Picard in his very Q way. Probably didn't, like you said, it didn't work out like he thought it would. but hey, I had written down part of the episode, part of episode two to recap.
Mm-hmm.
And the scene where Q, you first see Q, talking to JL in episode two, Jean-Luc had called himself, I will not be a piece in your game. And Q's like, you're more than a piece. You are the very board on which this game is played. And he goes, how unfair time is. And so he's telling JL, it's all about him, about something for him. And then Picard's like angry. He says, and then Q says, the chase is bleeding. The chase is dying in your arms. And I am but a suture in the wound. And then he pauses like he almost doesn't believe himself. And I'm like, how in the world? And that's when JL realizes he's not well. It's like, I think Q is basically trying to help Jean-Luc with his last abilities. I think it all's tying together.
I agree that Q is trying to help Picard, but it's a very roundabout way of doing it.
That's how Q does things.
True. But I also hope that if he is going to be benevolent with his dying breath, that it somehow helps him too, even if it's not his intention. I would like to see some salvation for Q, both ethically and physically.
He'll get something. Yeah. He'll get something. I'm excited to see what it's going to be.
Because like, there have been like fan fiction and even what if stories published by Paramount. What happens when the Borg try to assimilate Q? And or why is Q afraid of the Borg? He tells his kid not to upset them. Now, I would like to see more interaction between those two species.
We might finally get it.
Maybe. If we're lucky, with one episode left.
It does, I mean... We're going to see the Borg again because we're going to get that reappear on the bridge.
Yep.
Right when she tells Picard to look up, he's going to think of mom again. And the flash isn't going to happen. The self-destruct isn't going to happen.
Now that we know that it... Well, we don't know that the queen we saw in the first episode was Queen Jurati. We assume. And it's a reasonable assumption. But if it is her, it still seems rather... adversarial for her to beam through the shields and try to take over the ship when what she's trying to do is not be an enemy.
Yeah, she has a very Borg queen. Queen Agnes has a very Borg queen way of showing, I mean, no harm.
Right. Yeah, they still need to work on that a little bit. Gosh. Anything else about this week's episode?
Yes. Two things real quick. One, I wanted to talk about this so much on Thursday, but people cry. So, on young Jean-Luc's table, we got to see the NX-01 refit model. This is a ship that would have been from season 5 of Enterprise.
I didn't notice that. That is amazing.
Yeah, he has a model of... So, he finally got a canonized version of the refit model. He also... on my second viewing, I paused it. There's actually a model display in the background. So in that scene, plenty more, but there's more to make out. We got to see models for a Constellation class, Excelsior class, and Nebula class ship, and Deep Space Station K7, or that model anyway, and so many more, which is really cool. He also had the ship in the bottle on his table with the NX refit. That was cool.
That's awesome. And all those things were already canon, right?
All those other ones, yeah, are canon. Even the ship in the bottle. The only thing was the refit of the NX-01 was not yet, but they made it. So happy about that. I gotta talk about spoilers for a minute. It's not spoilering anything. I tried to be helpful this week. Like I did last season when I ripping out of Ichab. This week, trying to be conscientious of how people are very sensitive to spoilers. I did not put the text in the tweet, I put it in an image of text behind the sensitivity thing options on Twitter. And I still got yelled at by someone who has Twitter automatically show sensitive content.
Oops.
And I'm like, I can't help that. I did so many things. And I'm like, I am not going to apologize for something where I'm trying to help someone. And I did have a few people reach out privately and publicly saying thank you for this. So like, I try to be, I understand some people are, you know, don't like spoilers. And like yourself included, I try to be careful. But this was something that was self-harm, was something that was important to me to make sure people knew. And it's like, when you're something like that, and Star Trek doesn't seem to have problems talking about these anymore, I'm going to warn people and my friends.
Let me ask you this. What would you have done differently, either on Twitter or in the prelude for this week's audio episode, if the episode of Picard itself had come with a content warning?
I wouldn't have done anything.
Okay.
It was there already. You know, like even Netflix has a thing that says like gore or blood or something as a content warning in the corner when you start something. So I don't know why Paramount Plus or Paramount is so resistant to this, if they're, or just unaware it's a thing.
Yeah, I think when I was watching it, it said up in the upper left corner, like M for mature, but it didn't specifically say the sorts of things that you warned our podcast listeners about.
Right, because mature could cover so many different things.
You know, it could refer to sex or language or drug use.
Yeah. So I just got more annoyed at an interaction that happened this week. I think someone unfollowed me because of it. But I'm like, I can't protect you from yourself when you have options to mute things or not show sensitive content.
Well, it's like you and Char said, the fandom of Star Trek is the best and worst part of it.
Yes, just like every fandom.
Anything else going on?
No, I really like this episode, even my second viewing. And I'm excited to see where the season ends.
I would say this was my third favorite episode of the season.
Cool.
After the first two.
Awesome.
So maybe it will be a sandwich where the first two and the last two episodes are awesome and the middle six were just kind of meh. We will see. Until next time.
Dang, I didn't make a closing. I had the opening with the flashback thing and...
This has been Polygamer, a GameBits production. Find more episodes, read our blog, or send feedback at polygamer.net.
One thing we also didn't talk about, though, is the opening credits for Strange New Worlds.
We could add that real quick.
Well, I didn't watch it because I'm trying to avoid it.
Oh. If you don't want to watch it for worrying about spoilers, there's nothing spoiler. If you want to watch it because you want to be surprised that day you open it, cool.
I figured it doesn't have any plot spoilers. I just want to have the experience of watching it for the first time in the context of the episode. Now, I watched the Prodigy opening sequence months before the show ever aired. And I don't feel like that ruined anything for me. So it's not that I am consistently against watching and opening sequences. I just want to try something different from what I did last time.
Uh-huh.